Everybody ready?
Good morning to all. I'd like to call to order the Community Service and Public Safety Committee meeting for Monday, July 26, beginning at 9 a.m. Phyllis, in terms of FOIA, are we in compliance?
We are, yes.
Thank you. We have before us as our next item the approval of the minutes for our meeting on June the 28th. Is there a motion for approval? Second?
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Now, moving on to new business, our first item coming before us today is the Cultural Affairs Strategic Plan. And we're fortunate to have Gwen here to lead us through that. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Jen McEwen, Director of Cultural Affairs. In front of you is the new three-year strategic plan for the Office of Cultural Affairs and the Arts Council of Hilton Head. This was created after a number of months of work with our volunteer Arts Council and a planning consultant who helped us organize it. Mr. Harkins, you and I have chatted about kind of reformatting it a little bit so that our tactics, the three-year tactics, align under the overarching goals on that second page, which I am happy to do and get back to you. But if you guys have any questions, I'd love to answer them.
Okay. I think just if I could expand on your comment there.
Yeah.
And for the public, the comprehensive plan or major endeavors for the town, we like to create five buckets of activity, beginning, of course, with the mission, followed by the vision, and then moving to goals, strategies, and tactics. And that helps us in a very orderly way. And it's also good, I think, for you in terms of evaluation on how well you're doing and for those that you work with. So that was the thinking behind that. And Gwen has kindly agreed to reformat that later.
Jen, excuse me.
It's early. Please go ahead now. Any questions?
Just a comment, Jen.
Yeah.
Really good work, first of all.
Thanks.
I'm enthusiastic about the direction that you're taking the arts and culture in the community, and support you in whatever way I can. I think everybody understands and knows that the environment is important to me and important to the community. We value, there are several statements, and you have included the environment and natural resources. I sense that sort of a fundamental beginning point for Hilton Head Island, in order to have a unique sense of place, is its environment and its natural resources. And so I think that notion is embedded in our culture. And so I would like to see a stronger connection to our marketing message and your strategic plan that recognizes that really the beginning point for us as a community is the land and the environment that is in that. So where it says, and I agree with you, a community that celebrates and supports its artists and cultural organizations, I would encourage you to elevate environment and natural resources and somehow connect it as a fundamental part of our culture.
Great.
All right?
Will do.
Secondly, I'm encouraged that you recognize the absolutely essential connection to the marketing of the island, and that you are working with Bill Miles to present arts and culture perhaps in a more prominent role in the marketing message. And so, again, I think how we market this island encourages people who share the same values that are important to this community, so that in our marketing message, I do believe it's important for us to highlight arts, culture, and the environmental core value of the island. So again, connecting our sort of fundamental personality of environment, sense of place with our marketing message. Thank you very much.
Tom?
Jen, good work. You've got an awful lot in a relatively small document, but it does tie back to the new comprehensive plan and our plan. The vision and mission are identical to what's in there, so you're starting from a good point. You mentioned in the memo to Mark that the goal of the OCA is to set forth the town's definition of arts and culture to encompass and reflect our community's customs, belief, and traditions. That is a wide reach, but it's outstanding because everything that follows falls underneath that umbrella. At the bottom of that memo, you talk more about goals. I don't think you need to, because you talk about five goals, and then you list them in the following pages. As you consider tightening up the format, I would suggest that those five goals, as you describe them, are probably more likely strategies underneath the overreaching goal that you said earlier. And then you have appropriately listed the tactics underneath each one of those. So to what you and Bill were talking about before, there is a natural flow. Mission, vision, goal, and then the five strategies and all the tactics that you've listed. And I think you've got a good chance of accomplishing much of this if you're not fond of eating and sleeping. Good job.
Thank you. Tammy, please.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for this. It is an awful lot. I guess my questions just really come back to the educational component and the education diversity and inclusion policy and training materials, and what the oversight on that is and approval process.
So most of the education goals are in partnership with other organizations that are already executing those goals, so just working to utilize some of my relationships to expand their reach and influence. And then the diversity and inclusion goals, I generally oversee and have done much of the research. I've done quite a bit of diversity, inclusion, and equity training in the last couple of years. But I go through Angie, my supervisor, before we execute anything. So we did one entry-level EDI training over Zoom offered to all of the arts and culture professionals back in March, and the facilitator was a professional facilitator out of High Point, North Carolina. Angie sat in on that training as well, but it was very well received, and we surveyed the full community after the fact and got some really great feedback, mostly asking for it to be in person next time.
Right, and I guess my request is that we have an outline.
Yeah.
And we see what those organizations and what that educational program and those workshops entail, who's presenting them and such before they're implemented. I think that that's a critical part for our community to know. And I'd like to have that information prior to its being established.
Happy to.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Excellent work. Thanks to you and your advisory committee. Do we have a motion to proceed?
I would move that we approve the marketing plan of the OCA as presented, with the thought that the format will be subsequently changed a little bit and brought back to or forwarded to this committee.
Great.
I'll second.
Second.
So I'm not sure how that works in terms of my request, whether or not that gets implemented or if it's just a casual suggestion. I really am very interested in making sure it becomes part of the plan moving forward. So do I need to adjust?
I don't think so. I think the suggestion has been acknowledged, just as Mr. Ames' suggestions have been acknowledged and the format has been acknowledged.
I'll include it in the reform and the revisions.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
With that assurity, I will.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So moved. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next item is consideration of an ordinance prohibiting the use of certain tents, cabanas, and other similar shading devices within the prescribed distances of the public beach access points during certain times of the year. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. Diane Bush, staff attorney for the record. I have prepared a presentation for y'all on this issue.
And Diane, while you do that, I know there's a typos and there's some redundancy. So if you highlight those changes as we go through this, we'd appreciate it.
All right. This is the proposed ordinance. In terms of the redundancy, if you look at...
I think it's 16.
Well, 16, actually, I'm proposing that we change the definition for further clarification to indicate that what we're talking about is the width.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, the proposal is that from the access point of our beach parks, 100 feet in either direction, meaning the width, so that there is this portion of the beach where these devices are excluded from Memorial Day to Labor Day from 6 a.m. through 6 p.m. So during the day, that there is a prohibition for this total of 200 feet. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain the reason for that after I. So that's one change that is actually this is the correct what you see in front of you, and the reason that it was reposted with a Scribner's error is because this entire section had a duplicate. So this is the correct. With any of the
right. So on my screen, I have 216s and. We're now going forward with 116.
Yes,
correct.
Sir.
Thank you.
All right. So this is what I've put together. These are all of the beach parks that would be included. Mm-hmm. It's for the safety of beachgoers. Thank you. Pardon me. So these are the locations. Whoops. The purpose is for ultimately the safety of the beachgoers. The idea being that emergency services, lifeguards, our code enforcement folks are able to, at these access points, have a way to get down to the hard sand and then that way travel in order to reach whomever it is they need to reach that may need help. There's the second issue is that the vision on the beach is difficult. The tents are often so close together that, particularly for the lifeguards, They've got a good vision of the ocean, but it becomes more difficult as they look to their peripheral sides because they're looking down and what they're seeing is tents. This is from Islanders, and you can see it was taken on Saturday. You can see all the all the tents out there. This was from a citizen who was concerned, and this is in between Folly Field and I don't recall. It is a video, and it's hard to see without it running. I couldn't figure out how to make it work. But this is the third issue for us, is the propensity of these devices, or possibility that they could be set free. And you can see in the wind, with the video shows it flapping to and fro. Local or other state towns that have banned or regulated shade devices, Myrtle Beach, they're entirely banned, the whole beach. North Myrtle Beach from May 15th to the 15th. And then Surfside Beach, they've got some restrictions, but not quite as restrictive as the other two. So that's what I have to present to you.
Any comments, questions? Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I'm happy to start. I understand I understand those pictures. I mean, you don't have to really have many words when you see those pictures and the difficulties and the aesthetics of the beach when you have 10 by 10 or those big pop-up tents literally lining the shoreline. And that's clearly of a concern. I think there are other, there's a whole lot of, has this conversation come before us before recently? I know a couple of years ago it did, but more recently with regard to these. Well, in not actually recalling how that worked out, I'll leave some of my questions aside and talk about them privately. But if we're talking about the beach, public beach access points and 100 feet in each direction, I guess my question really has to do with where the lifeguard stands are. Do we have an established points where lifeguards, because I see them now increasing down the beach. So does this effectively do what it is that it's saying that it should do? Are we limiting those people who really need shade, the opportunity to get shade? I know at Islanders Beach we have a beach pavilion being built, but there are those who need more shade than that. But I guess I'm going to just go back to my fundamental question and say, where do we have established lifeguard stands on the beach? Because if we're trying to help the lifeguard see, does that swath of land that we're talking about, that 200 feet, really satisfy that particular goal? And then I will ask my questions either privately or as we go through this discussion.
I don't have an answer for you on that. I know that they are sporadically placed throughout the beach, but I don't know the precise locations. But I can find that out for you.
I see increasing lifeguard stands coming down the beach, which is great. We obviously appreciate and value the job the lifeguards do, but I'm just wondering if this kind of meets that goal. And also it doesn't, and I'm not sure it should, so don't get me wrong, but this doesn't necessarily address the large rentals, homes who bring out 5 or 6 of these types of coverings on a private beach access. And so I'm just not sure we're meeting the goal. So further discussion, I'm all ears to listen what other people are thinking.
Bill?
David, please.
I see some people in the audience who I would like to hear from before I make my comments.
All right.
I will yield.
Tom, do you have any comments before we?
Wait.
Okay. Let's open it up to the public. I see we have some very familiar faces that are quite familiar with the situation.
Good morning.
Amber Kuhn. I'm one of three. I'm two of three contractors that work on the beach 20 hours a day. The other two are back there, or the other one. So Turtle Patrol in the morning, personal property pickups, Spartina Marine Consulting. In the evening, Hilton Head picks up trash slash personal property most of the day, excluding about 5 hours a day. A lot of it, and it gets its own category, is the pop-up tent, which is a 10 by 10. I've noticed in this ordinance that we're talking about basically 1,800 square feet, or 1,800 feet. If you put 200 on 9 accesses, you have 20,000 feet of beach, and we're talking about 2,000 feet. If there's an emergency and the vehicle can get 100 feet on either side of the access and the emergency is in between the accesses, then it's really doesn't make a difference if we're not talking about the beach as a whole. 12 by 12 tent is something that you rarely see. The one that you see 99% of the time is the 10 by 10. There are several options for shade. I brought this up over a year ago because last year was the first year of the personal property pickup. And the amount of tent skeletons, what we call them, it's obscene. And you can't take it off the beach, you know, in their defense, once it's bent at all. You cannot fold it back up. So it's up to me and the lifeguards to cut them down with bolt cutters. They're sharp. They take up a lot of space next to the trash cans. If they're drug up that far, they're a nuisance. And as far as I know, this ordinance is based on safety, but I also know that the original complaint has to do with the amount of trash that it produces. You can put an umbrella up, no problem, get the same amount of shade. These tents are just easy, cheap. They leave them behind because they don't take them home with them. They buy them here, they leave them here, and that's up to us to take care of. And we're, you know, paid to do that, so that's fine. But they're dangerous to the lifeguards. They come to work with bandages on their hands from being cut. I've been cut several times by them. So if we're talking about tourists only and that's who we care about, then okay, leave the tent. But if we're talking about our contractors, our residents who don't want to see that lining the beach, if the lifeguards have to get down to the water, that's going to be difficult too, because I don't know why I'm talking to just you, Tamara, but it's for the safety issue. We're talking about 2,000 feet of beach. And why is Sea Pines Beach Club on there when we're just talking about public beach accesses? And we don't really have anything going on at Mitchellville Beach. So I don't understand what's going on there. We don't even enforce lighting ordinance down there, so we're going to enforce a tent ordinance. And I rarely see tents down there. Vehicles, yes. Four-wheelers, yeah, we have a problem with that. But I also don't understand why the people that are on the beach 20 hours a day, every single day, I didn't know about this until like a couple days ago. Input, we have it. Because we're on the beach every single day, all day long, morning, noon, night. But we weren't consulted when this was put together at all. And I just don't understand why the town doesn't use the resources that they have, which is us, to put something together like this. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Amber. Other comments from the public?
I'm Mike Wagner. I'm the operations manager for Shore Beach Service. Just to answer your question, Ms. Becker, out of about 23 high chair yards that are up in the high chairs, that would affect about five. Yep.
Don't go.
Oh, okay.
I think that Amber made a valid point. Have you been consulted about this?
A couple questions were asked of us.
Okay. My reaction is that this addresses or justifies the ordinance based on safety, and certainly that's important. But I also think that the issue of refuse, debris, is important, and I also think that we ought to be having a conversation about beach character. So I think those are things that we need to be talking about. Talk to us a little bit from your perspective about those three things. Safety, how valid is this? How much of an issue is it? Secondly, what are the obstacles or the challenges that you have regarding cleanup? And then thirdly, just any anecdotal reactions you have to beach character.
As far as the safety aspect from them blocking the view of guards, it can happen, but I don't think it's a major issue. Usually our high chairs are staying out in front of all, we have them pulling down to the water anyway. So usually they're not in the way. They can be, but usually not, and we can ask them to move if they do. As far as the trash, I mean, it is a big portion of what we do as far as trash. You know, with the canopy versus like an umbrella canopy, as Amber mentioned, it kind of gets almost like a spider web, you know, where you have to cut it. So, you know, where other trash is basically throw it in a trailer, that's take 15, 20 minutes to cut it down. So it does take time. I mean, our, you know, as an organization, we've looked at it as we're paid to do it, so we do it. So if you know, until somebody tells us not to, we'll keep doing that. And then you said, and one thing I will mention that Amber mentioned, it is, you know, there is a little bit of a safety aspect for our staff when cutting those up, because they don't cut real cleanly. You know, we're using basically, you know, bolt cutters to cut them, leave sharp edges, and sometimes they kind of, you know, fall in different directions. And we've had, you know, a little bit of injuries from that, nothing major, but here and there. And I think there was one more.
Beach character. I'm not sure it's your purview to have to comment on that, but if you do.
Yeah, I mean, I get comments from the public here and there about not being, not liking the aesthetic of them. You know, it doesn't bother me that much one way or the other,
yeah,
but I do hear the comments from time to time.
Out of curiosity, if somebody comes to the beach and sets those up at low tide, what happens as the tide comes in?
I'd say they rarely set them up at low tide. They're usually up by high tide. Maybe a little bit at, you know, a little bit above, below the high tide mark, but usually they're almost to high tide. So we don't really see much movement. I'd say umbrellas are more where you get the movement, people moving them throughout the day.
Based on what you've said, one way of looking at that information is that we, the taxpayers, have to bear the burden of cleaning up somewhat irresponsible or careless. So I think that's an issue we need to deal with. The question I have was raised by Ms. Becker, and that is, how often do you have people coming to Caligny and some of the other public beaches where, in a sense, shade is essential? And I don't know how to evaluate that, but my reaction is that if Myrtle Beach is banning these things, they may have come to the conclusion that that number is relatively small or insignificant. So I'm interested in other people's comments.
Thank you for your
question. Tom?
I think this is definitely a step in the right direction. I'd like to see some more evolution of an ordinance like this. My first impression of 100 feet either side of the main access is relatively small. 100 feet is the width of this room. We're talking about 30 yards, and it is relatively small. If someone would need shade, this is not stopping them from setting up outside the 100 feet. I think it's a step in the right direction. We may have some more work to do on it, to your point, Amber. And I'd like to be certain that we cover the waterfront, so to speak, with people who are most familiar with the situation at the beach.
I think
may I offer some follow-up?
Please.
The areas that you're talking about, umbrellas would be permitted. Mm-hmm. It's just these large devices, which of course are for shade. We actually have gotten feedback through our code officers who are on the beach and communicate with Shore Beach Services and with Amber routinely about what's going on, which is where the photos came from when they were there seeing, sort of investigating the issues that we were interested in when we put this together. The other thing that I wanted to share is that the town has just hired a beach manager, and that individual will be in charge of these 9 beaches to make sure that there is the enforcement that's necessary. Good. And as to sea pines, you can buy a pass, go in through the gate, and access the beach there. So that's the reason that was included.
Thank you, Diane.
David? I guess I won't address it directly at you. I'll just make a comment. You can have a seat if you want.
All right, thank you.
Where's that in here?
The ordinance as it's drafted now targets one of 3 areas, and I think that's inadequate. I think council has to decide our attitude towards trash pickup and our attitude towards beach character, because if it's only 100 feet, that doesn't materially change 2 of the 3 items. So I would agree with Tom that 100 feet is remarkably inadequate, especially if we are trying to discourage the use of these. And I think that's an important word. Are we trying to discourage the use of tents on our beach? And for the 2 reasons that I've already mentioned, the trash pickup and the expense, and then secondly, beach character. So I just don't think that the ordinance yet has gotten the policy direction from council to be an adequate ordinance for the purposes that maybe we are trying to achieve.
Thank you. Tammy, please.
Correct. And I say correct because I feel the same way. I think that there's more discussion and input that needs to be gathered before a policy like this is put in place. Also want to say, and I know that council has been asking or talking about putting together a meeting on this, and every time I say it's a day late already, but we need to have a workshop and talk about the capacity of this island and what is manageable and what isn't manageable. And when you look at the pictures that were shown, you can clearly see that we have, perhaps in many people's opinion, mine included, if not hit that point, are at that point. So when we're comparing ourselves to what Myrtle Beach has done, I think I think that's all the example we need to explain that. So I'm looking forward to further input and further discussion in terms, and I also think that our beach management person needs to be heavily involved in these discussions, because with regard to that, there'll be the whatever comes from this enforceability and educational type of program, obviously the aesthetics, the refuse that is absolutely something that needs to be addressed, and obviously the overall safety, not only during the day, but when those folks who we've hired, who are often young children, young people, know what the right word is, but they're young. They're younger people, younger than I am, are out there trying to control and manage all of that garbage. We need to make sure that we're not putting them in those types of situations. So that policy program needs to be fully developed. And with that, I would ask that we that a motion to send this. Do we need a motion to send this back to the drawing board?
I think it would be helpful.
Okay. So I would like to make a motion to send the ordinance on this matter back for further discussion, input, and deliberation before it's brought to us again.
Is there a second? Is there a second?
I'll second.
I think this rests on our shoulders. I mean, we've talked, and so I'm not sure that we've given enough concise or consensus about what we're wanting.
Go ahead.
Mr. Town Manager, do you feel as though we've given you enough information for us to be able to rely on another draft?
You said there's two missing elements, and right, so Diane and I were just whispering to each other. We can address those couple elements, and I'll make sure that we meet with Amber and Shore Beach, and I know that Josh has been involved a little bit with Shore Beach. We've just got some more thinking to do. I don't, you know, the goal of this is a first step, right? There's a lot of work to do. Hiring a beach manager isn't going to solve all of our problems, right, because there's layers of it. There's definitely how are people treating our beach. A lot of that always can't be addressed through code and code officers.
Mark, when does he start?
He started last week.
Has he been involved in this?
No, not from that perspective. What this is to simply clear a path to the beach, right? So Shore Beach Services, this really originated from a request that I received almost straight out of the gate here. And it was a request that I received that I took a look at, and Josh and I had a lot of conversation about it and did a little bit of research on what others are doing where the capacity is more than. The goal isn't just to clear a line of sight for lifeguards. They're perched high. Arguably, they can see above the tents. Now that we do have a beach program manager, I think it's important that they, EMS, code officer, Beaufort County Sheriff's Office, Shore Beach Services, have a clear path from point A to point B with an ATV, with any equipment, somewhere to drag whatever they need to through without having to zigzag through tents, right? So that's the first step. And I think that's what we are trying to accomplish here. But if you are asking for a bigger solution to a bigger problem, we can take a look at the ordinance. We'll definitely work with Amber, who has a lot of good input, definitely Shore Beach Services, and I will engage our beach program manager. He's six business days on the job right now, so we'll get him involved. Does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you, Martins. As we go forward, there's some... I'm trying to create a screen in my mind to give some guidance going forward. And the points that come up, I think, quickly from my way of thinking are, one is safety, two is refuse, and maybe we wrestle with the question, tents versus umbrellas. Do we want both or one or the other? Appearance. Enforceability, education, capacity, impact on our branding, and uniformity. I think if we have a thought process that goes through a screen like that, it could be helpful. So to staff, thank you for the hard work bringing a draft document forward. This is how things are made. We have probably several iterations going forward, but that melded thought process will come up with the best product. David?
Yeah, I think there's a motion on the table, and we need to vote on it.
Yes. Okay, so we have a motion to remand this to staff. We've had some editorial comment on it in terms of guidance. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So moved. Thank you very much. Our next item on the agenda is consideration of resolutions authorizing the town to execute a permanent storm drainage easement for the property located at on Main Street 3901 and standard drainage agreements in access and drainage and maintenance easements with Spanish Wells Club POA, Seagrass Landing POA, Yacht Cove POA, Wells East POA, Jarvis Club, and Bermuda Point POAs. Good morning, Jeff. Thank you.
Good morning. Jeff Netzinger, stormwater manager for the town. This is a couple of different issues here kind of lumped together. I got a very brief number of slides to show you. As you said, there's two different issues here. We'll go to the first one real quick here. There's a property on Main Street where we have an existing ditch and pipe system running parallel to Main Street. It drains a lot of the school properties off of Main Street and around the corner, as you can see on that plat there. I got the property of interest and the easement highlighted there in the back of the medical office, and also in back of Island Tire, which fronts on 278. Just mm-hmm. a missing piece there where we need the easement there to have continuous easement to maintain drainage. So we're recommending that we get that easement from that property owner. And second issue, so there's, to date, there's been 11 drainage agreements signed with some of the larger communities on the island. Over the last couple of years, we've been looking at revising and standardizing the terms and conditions for those agreements. We're getting ready to hopefully pull the trigger on getting all that done later this year. But in the interim, over the last few years, we've had several other folks, other communities, raise their hand and say we would also be interested in having a similar agreement. So there have been six to date that we have proceeded in kind of going along our process for what's required based on the guidance given by council and how we got the first 11 agreements in place. And those six here before us today are listed. And I have a map to show you how they fit in with our current agreement partners here. So there in yellow, you have the 11 current agreement, drainage agreement partners, and in that purple, the six applicants here who we are recommending would also be given similar agreements.
Thank you, Jeff.
Any questions?
Open it up for comments, questions.
Jeff, is the goal to take control of and responsibility for the entire stormwater system on the island?
That would be very challenging. So one, the agreements, it makes a lot of sense, the fact that just based on this map that you see here, an awful lot of the fee payers who pay the stormwater utility fee that funds the stormwater utility do in fact live in these private communities. But these current partners are not the only private communities and fee payers on the island. So one of the guiding principles in these things is that if these private communities have shared, platted, common rights of way, that we would be responsible for the systems that drain those rights of way within these communities. So these other communities that are the applicants today would also like that service also have shared platted rights of way in providing access to single family residence or multifamily residential. So to the point where you are providing that common access and that communal level of service, that's the theme of where we would take care of the drainage. We're not talking about going into commercial properties or onto horizontal property regimes and taking care of their parking lot drainage, just holding to that same principle of protecting the community's roadways and access from a drainage perspective.
And does the new standardized agreement, or will the new standardized agreement, be very clear in explaining that?
Yes, we spent 2 years going over that, refining the terms, mm-hmm. making sure it was very clear what we provided, what we didn't provide, so on both sides everyone would understand what they're getting and what they're not getting with the drainage agreement.
That is a huge step, because there is a misunderstanding in all of these communities about what the town would be responsible for. Mm-hmm. Most of the people that I talk with think we're coming in and fix any drainage issues in the stormwater system within the community. So I think as you develop this standardized agreement, which is outstanding, I think really has to be made very, very clear to the management of the HOA, and if there's going to be any press releases tangent with this, that it says what we as a town will be responsible for and what we will not.
Yeah, so it's an ongoing education process. I'm always in close communication with the management of the mm-hmm. current agreement partners. And I believe that it's pretty clear in my individual conversations with each and every one of them that they understand what the limitations of the agreements are. I think it's untenable to expect, just in economic terms, that a relatively small fund could support 100% all the maintenance of the vast stormwater infrastructure in all the communities. So we're there essentially to provide that corrective maintenance aspect for these communities, going in and fixing deficiencies when we find them, according to ranking them by priority. And that's how we organize our budget and our list of projects maintenance projects that we undertake on an annual basis.
And that works. People are also surprised when they learn that the fund generates a little less than $5 million a year. And of that $5 million, we spend a little less than $2 million a year on new projects and maintenance. And that $2 million can't go island-wide. But the way you account for it and the way you prioritize is really, really effective. But people don't know that.
If I may elaborate on Mr. Lennox's comments and bring it home to Ward 2, we have a fairly complex situation relative to stormwater management that deals with the POA, the Country Club of Hilton Head, and two private condo associations and one commercial, and they're entwined together, but there's a delineation of responsibility for some of those parties in a solo way, and in other cases it's a joint interest responsibility. And a compliment to the staff here, Jeff came out that both Jeffs came out with people quite expert in it, did the analysis, and gave us a report that we could not have done ourselves. So thank you.
I have some comments, if I may.
Please.
Jeff, I feel obligated to ask this question as a representative of the people. Do you have any idea what cost these additional services will?
So we kind of were trying to figure that out a few years ago, actually about the same year that I was arriving. It was actually shortly before Matthew. Staff was kind of tasked with figuring out, well, if we did, apply the same principle to any community that could qualify based on what was in place, how much more infrastructure we'll be adding. And again, deficiencies are deficiencies, and we rank them on how bad they are, no matter where they occur. Mm-hmm. And once we prioritize them and we go down the list based on the budgets and what we have available, we stop when we get to that threshold of what our budget can handle. But how much more infrastructure? If you add it all up compared to what we're already obligated, it's about 2%, or a little bit less, in addition. If these six partners plus everyone else on the island, any other community that might be eligible, were to be added.
Okay. So. The second comment, and I've always been troubled by this, I think the original purpose or principle behind the program was to provide arterial drainage so that larger areas of the community would be able to be drained as necessary. The shipyard drainage area was the first one in order to drain North Forest Beach. So water had to go through Shipyard and then through Wexford and out to Broad Creek. So I understand and agree with the principle of arterial drainage and the obligation of the town to keep that working. Where I have some hesitancy, and you in effect admitted that where there's a catch basin in a parking lot, that's not the responsibility of the town. And so I don't think we can retrace our steps on this, but I'm just making a comment that the catch basin at the end of a cul-de-sac in a private community, in my opinion, should not be the responsibility of the town, but where the collection of that cul-de-sac goes into what I'm calling our arterial drainage, then yes, it does. So I think that we have more work to be done, I believe, on what is truly the responsibility of the town and what is the responsibility of private communities, whether it's Yacht Cove or Sea Pines or Hilton Head Plantation. Thank you.
Any other comments?
I just have a quick question. So as I recall, when this was first being presented to us, there were a number of communities that had particular questions, and there was some conversation back and forth with the agreement. Have all those been resolved?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Clarification, adding 2% additional infrastructure to the system does not increase the budget by 2%.
Correct.
No.
Thank
the
you.
Budget will increase if we choose to change the fee. Yeah.
We thank Mr. Lennox as chair of the Finance Committee. All right. We've had Jeff's recommendations advanced before us. Is there a motion to accept?
And forward to council.
And forward to town council.
I'll make that motion, sure.
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Is there a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Aye.
We stand adjourned. Thank you.